going to touch that because that's not, you know, I'm not here to venture hypotheticals. You know, I'm here to talk about this particular case.
All right. Now, I'll probe another boundary of that distinction. You say that the interest of the movie studios is in preventing the distribution of executable circumvention tools. Would you include in the scope of that interest preventing the dissemination of the source code? And if so, how would you reconcile that with the recent Ninth Circuit court finding that source code constitutes constitutionally protected speech?
I have not seen in the in this case, the New York MPAA case, from the trial transcript, there doesn't appear to be any interest in limiting dissemination of the source code. You know, what there does seem to be is a real interest in disseminating the compiled executable.
That's very interesting.
The Santa Clara case is different, and I wish I knew more about the Santa Clara trade secret case. Because, yes, you're right. What I understand is that the DVD consortium there is very interested in restricting access to and distribution of the source code.
Otherwise, they wouldn't have sealed the exhibit.
Sure.
The source code that they themselves put in the public record, yes.
Actually, I'll add a point of clarification on the New York case. The concept of differentiation between source code and object code was raised, and the court specifically found no difference at all and didn't have any problem enjoining either.
Wasn't there an extended I'm sorry.
I would like to make one comment about the panels. Mark is not representing the MPAA. He's not counsel in either of the cases. He has agreed to sit in and argue their side, as it were.
Devil's
so
advocate.
This is why we're saying devil's advocate. He's not the devil himself.
although for this wrestling match, I'm depicted as the grinding heel. Isn't that big?
And actually, from what I've seen, the BSD devils have been rather popular.
You dress supermodels in tight red vinyl, that's going to happen.
Okay. Eric, were you finished?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to turn it around now, and Mark gets to ask the pointed questions.
Let's see. All right. Alan, I've got a question for you, which is, I know from the transcript on January 20th that the court noted that the defendants did not deny that the DECSS circumvents the DVD content scrambling system. Why didn't they do that?
Really easy answer to your question that's unfortunately very simple and not really helpful to this discussion. The easiest answer is that despite requesting continuances formally and informally, despite having errors in notice requirements, and despite having a lack of follow-through with the court's own orders regarding when papers were to be served, the court declined to extend the time period within which we could file documents. And so essentially there was no evidence before the court on our side. That is, none of the declarations that were filed were accepted into evidence. There was only argument.
You missed the deadline.
Essentially, yep.
That'll come in at trial, though. I mean, you'll have a chance to make those.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Barry, I've got a question for you. The Constitution includes the First Amendment. It also includes the Copyright Clause, which is the basis for providing copyrighted protection for authors and producers of movie, software, other works. Okay. The First Amendment is very important and should be guarded, but why should it completely cancel out the effect of the Copyright Clause?
Well, it doesn't, and especially doesn't in this case. The Copyright Clause, of course, needs to be read in light of the First Amendment, for example, to permit fair use. But I don't think that, especially when we're talking about the New York case here, that the intellectual property interests or rights of the film studios are threatened at all by this. What we have is a piece of software that was developed for an ex- explicit purpose, and that was for interoperability, which in fact the statute allows. This has been misportrayed, I think, by the plaintiffs in the case and by a lot of the press as a case about piracy. As Eric said, this is not a case about piracy. This is to the extent to which this is useful at all on piracy, it is not very practical or cost effective. And so I think this needs to be understood as not a case about the copyright or the intellectual property interests of the film studios at all. So I don't see a tension here between the First Amendment and the copyright interests of the film studios. In fact, I remain, as someone who has observed this case from the outside so far, puzzled by the fact that the film studios bring this case at all. It seems to me that rather than suing the defendants, it would have been much more logical to embrace the defendants and say, hey, there's another market here. There is an increasingly large installed base of Linux users. Not only do we not have to pay somebody to write this program, they'll give it to us for nothing. And we can increase our market for this. And I think this is, you know, the same mistake that the studios made in the Betamax case. They didn't recognize that out of a sort of knee-jerk sense of control, they didn't recognize that there was a technological development that would expand their market, and they ought to be encouraging it rather than going after the weakest parties here in what I think is going to be a fruitless attempt to block it.
Barry, you asked me a compound question, so I'm going
go
to
ahead.
Use that prerogative for a follow-up, which is, well, if that's the case, then why did some people in the community, like, go into a frenzy in November and December to start mirroring the DECSS all over the internet? Wasn't that just an attempt to, like, let the genie out of the bottle and make sure that there was no opportunity for either business plans for anybody or for a negotiated settlement?
I think it was an attempt to let the genie out of the bottle, and the genie is out of the bottle, which raises some interesting questions in this case about whether an injunction is appropriate. But I think it was a reaction by a community that believes very strongly, and I agree with them, that they have a right to interoperability here, and that also recognizes, as the plaintiffs in this case apparently do not recognize, that the genie can be taken out of the bottle, and that this software can be made so accessible and widespread as to make the litigation, you know, basically meaningless. I mean, at this stage, that is one of the most disturbing parts of the speed at which the New York court insisted in handling this, which is that, the genie was out of the bottle. And it seems to me that if we're going to, this case tests a lot of important propositions under the DMCA, and if that was going to happen, that it should have happened with both sides having an opportunity to carefully prepare their cases. I understand your view that somehow the MPAA is being irreparably harmed. Well, I think the harm's already been done. And another month wouldn't have made a whole lot of difference. It would, however, have meant that the court would have heard two equally well-prepared arguments.